Welcome to Washington Today for Monday, May 16th, 2022. I'm Gary Starkoff. Thanks a lot for joining us today. Here are some headlines. The Associated Press is reporting the U.S. death toll from COVID-19 hit 1 million today, calling it a once unimaginable figure that only hints at the pandemic's true loss. That number of dead is equivalent to a 9/11 attack every day for 336 days. It's roughly equal to the number of Americans who died in the Civil War and World War II combined. Three out of every four deaths have been people 65 and older. More men have died than women. And while white people made up most of the overall deaths, Black, Hispanic, and Native Americans have been roughly twice as likely to die than their white counterparts. The death toll is based on death certificate data compiled by the Centers for Disease Control's National Center for Health Statistics. The U.S. has the highest reported COVID-19 death toll of any country and is averaging about 300 COVID-19 deaths per day. New cases have climbed more than 60% in the past 2 weeks to an average of about 86,000 people a day. On Thursday, President Biden ordered American flags lowered to half staff and called each life lost, quote, irreplaceable. He went on to say, quote, as a nation, we must not grow numb to such sorrow. To heal, we must remember. Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell called Finland and Sweden, quote, important additions to NATO, as he led a delegation of Republican senators to the region in a show of support against Russia's aggression in Ukraine. The announcement comes as the leaders of both Northern European countries announced over the weekend that they would seek membership in the military alliance. We'll hear from Senator McConnell and the president of Finland coming up. Tomorrow is primary day in five states, and one of the biggest issues on voters' minds is the economy. We'll hear from Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg and House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy on that issue coming up as well. According to TheHill.com, amongst the most watched contests across the country, both Republican and Democratic races for the open U.S. Senate seat in Pennsylvania, the Republican race for North Carolina's open Senate seat, and its 11th Congressional District Republican primary, also Oregon's 5th District Democratic primary. We begin in Buffalo, where federal officials are investigating Saturday's grocery store massacre that killed 10 people and wounded three others as a hate crime. The city's police commissioner told ABC News that investigators found evidence that shows the white gunman planned to continue his bloody rampage down the street to, quote, kill more Black people. At the White House, President Biden awarded the Medal of Valor to one of the victims, retired police officer Aaron Salter, who was working as a security guard at the Tops Market and died trying to stop the attack.
Just yesterday, I stood at the United States Capitol for the National Police Officer Memorial Service to pay tribute to hundreds of fallen heroes. And I was joined by the president of Fraternal Order of Police, Patrick Gillis, who's here today. I don't know where Patrick is, but I know he's here today. There you go, Patrick. Thank you for yesterday and thank you for today. We pay tribute to all law enforcement officers and their families who understand what it takes, what's at risk, to save and protect all of us. And that includes paying tribute to the Buffalo police officer, Aaron Slater, who gave his life trying to save others when a gunman shot and killed 10 innocent people in a grocery store in Buffalo on Saturday. He actually was able to shoot the assailant twice, but he had on a bulletproof vest. And he lost his life in the process. No one understands more than all of you here today the pain and anguish those families in Buffalo feel. But if they were pulled into when it happens, at least in my experience, you feel like you're pulled into a black hole inside your chest and everything, you can't, and it's hard.
President Biden speaking from the White House East Room at a Medal of Valor ceremony honoring 15 public safety officers, including two who died in the line of duty, and Aaron Salter, who was a security guard working at the supermarket over the weekend in Buffalo, New York, and died there. The Medal of Valor is awarded to public safety officers who've shown acceptable courage, regardless of personal safety, in the attempt to save or protect others from harm. You can see that entire event at cspan.org and also on our C-SPAN Now video app. And some top Republicans in the House of Representatives are facing criticism from within their own party that they have failed to condemn the same racist rhetoric used by the suspected Buffalo gunman. In a Twitter statement from earlier today, Wyoming Republican Liz Cheney said, quote, "The House GOP leadership has enabled white nationalism, white supremacy, and anti-Semitism. History has taught us what begins with words ends in far worse. GOP leaders must renounce and reject these views and those who hold them." A spokesman for Elise Stefanik of New York, who replaced Representative Cheney in her House Republican leadership post, responded to that criticism also on Twitter, saying, quote, "Any implication or attempt to blame the heinous shooting in Buffalo on the congresswoman is a new disgusting low for the left. They're never Trump allies and the sycophant stenographers in the media. The shooting was an act of evil, and the criminal should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law. Despite sickening and false reporting, the congresswoman has never advocated for any racist position or made a racist statement. She opposes mass amnesty for illegal immigrants and Joe Biden's wide open border." And here's new White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre at today's briefing on the rise of racist rhetoric.
But on this notion that immigrants and others are believed to be by some taking over and pushing white people out of positions of authority in this country, which is at the heart of so much of this terror that is being spewed online. Does the White House believe these views are being amplified by Tucker Carlson?
Look, you know, like I said, we are still figuring out the motivation of all of this, and we are very clear. Look, you know, as you all know, watching what happened in Charlottesville was a major factor in the president deciding to run, right? And back in 2017, you know, many of those dark voices still exist today, and the president is determined, as he was back then, and he is determined today, to make sure that we fight back against those forces of hate and evil and violence. So that's what we're going to keep doing. That's what we're going to continue to call out. But we reject hatred and extremism ideologies.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre at today's briefing. With primary elections tomorrow in five states, a Monmouth University poll released last week shows that while voters are split on which party should control Congress after this fall's elections, most agree that the economy and abortion rights are the top issues on their mind. Today on Capitol Hill, House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy talked about the economy at a Republican roundtable event.
One thing that is just devastating to this country that is happening is inflation and the problems that is happening under this Biden administration, the mistakes they are making. I mean, you think just in the short time period of what they've been able to do, inflation that we haven't seen since the early 80s. And it's a regression. It's probably the most painful thing you could do to the entire country. It's a tax on everybody. But when you think about a small business that's just come through a pandemic, what's compounded upon that is the mistakes this administration make, but the number of regulations that they're putting on them. Well, they say it costs them about 11% more. Well, that's even more inflation upon them. And then the struggling to hire people. And we watched what the Biden administration did was actually paying people more to stay home than to work. So then you watch, I used to be a small business owner, but to go through this right now is probably one of the most painful times. The price increases and then the gas prices. We watched what this Biden administration did when they first came in, attacking the energy industry. What did they think the price of gasoline will get to? So every small business in there, it's a higher cost with regulation, higher cost of hiring somebody to work, higher cost for goods and services, and then your gasoline compounding across this. That's why this economy is hurting. Many people believe we're already in a recession. I mean, that means two down quarters. We'll see that coming out of the end of June. But a lot of that is created based upon what the administration has been doing. And then compounded on that, the crime crisis. Think about what you're doing in your small business, what you have to expend on security and others that you haven't thought of in the past. And that's the discussion I want to have today. Because the one thing I've learned have been a small business owner, there were three lessons that never left me. The first to work, the last to leave, and the last to be paid. And if you're the last one getting paid and government's making it more expensive, you're not making money, you're losing money. But you've invested everything into it. You just came out of a pandemic hoping it would be better. And then you've got higher regulations, higher gas prices. And in a small business, you really learn the economic responsibilities. But you can't just keep spending money. And that's what this government has been doing, propelling inflation along the way.
And during an interview on CNBC earlier today, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg also talked about inflation and how the Biden administration thinks corporate taxes can help ease the problem.
On the corporate tax front, and look, I've talked about how you could raise corporate taxes from where they are today. So we're not so far off here. But do you not agree that these are two different issues? Meaning, if you change corporate taxes, yes, in the immediate term, maybe it will have some impact on inflation. But corporate tax is a long-term issue. You either deal with it because you think it's the right thing to do or it's the wrong thing to do, not because you're trying to deal with inflation right this second.
Well, a lot of it is what you're going to do with the revenue. And again, we have an agenda to use tax revenue on things that are going to ease inflationary pressures. But also, we have a very clear contrast right now, right? You have Senate Republican proposals that are about raising taxes on the poor and the middle class. And you have the president's worldview, which is shared by the majority of Americans, that if anybody needs to be carrying more of the load right now, it is the wealthiest and corporations that have become extremely profitable. By the way, corporations also that have often, hold on, this is really important.
Well, everybody
corporations that have invoked inflation as an excuse to keep prices high in ways that are not just reflected by the supply picture and are pocketing the difference.
Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg with CNBC's Andrew Ross Sorkin. The White House announced today that it is working with key manufacturers to help solve the national shortage of baby formula. In a statement, the administration said they are working with four major infant formula manufacturers, Mead Johnson, Abbott, Nestle, and Perrigo, to, quote, identify transportation, logistical, and supplier hurdles to increasing production. With more on that, here's White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre.
Are there any specific actions that this administration took, meetings, phone calls, briefings in February or any earlier to begin addressing this potential shortage?
I mean, you've heard us talk about this. You've seen my colleagues on your networks talking about what we have done since February. We've been working around on this 24/7. But I do want to give you a little bit of an update of where we are. So getting more safe infant formula onto shelves across the country is one of the president's top priorities, right? This is something that he is focusing on very acutely. And again, I said 24/7, we have been working on this since we learned about this back in February. It's important to remember this shortage exists because Abbott closed a facility because of safety concerns from the FDA. The FDA is working closely with Abbott to bring the facility back online safely. That's the key here, safely. We want to make sure that this is done in a safe way. We are very close to having a path forward to safely reopening the facility. You can expect an announcement from FDA later today on that, that will go into more details. We're also moving as quickly as possible to safely bring in additional product from other countries as soon as today as well. We will be able to make an announcement on the expedited process to bring additional safe conduct product to the American stores, to American store shelves. And throughout the weekend, we've been working closely with manufacturers and retailers to identify transportation and logistical needs to increase the amount and spread of FDA approved formula being shipped into the country and ensure that formula is quickly moving from factories to retailers. The president understands, he gets this, he gets how stressful it is for parents.
White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre. On Capitol Hill today, the House gaveled in at noon Eastern time to do work on 17 bills, including several dealing with cybersecurity and veterans issues. The Senate came in at 3 p.m. Eastern time and is expected to vote on whether to advance the $40 billion House-passed Ukraine aid bill. With more on the week ahead in Washington, here's Washington Post congressional correspondent Mariana Sotomayor and Morgan Chalfant, White House reporter from The Hill.
I saw that the House this week is taking up some emergency legislation dealing with the national shortage of, potentially a national shortage of baby formula in the country. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us any more about that?
Yeah, so the House is actually going to be out for 2 weeks. So they're really trying to get a number of things done. Baby formula being on top of that after we saw it really blow up on the Hill. Many Republicans, Democrats starting to address that. The legislation itself is actually going to allow low income mothers. It's called the program's called WIC, and it's essentially going to allow them to be able to access that. That is really where we're seeing a lot of that formula not being able to be given to these lower income families. And you know, there's discussions about the Defense Production Act, which we of course heard throughout the pandemic about how the federal government could direct manufacturers to just speed up the process. And that's not part of the legislation, but declaring some kind of emergency in if this situation were to happen again, that's what Congress is trying to address.
And has the White House addressed it? Is there a potential for some sort of executive order on this? Or
so they've taken a number of limited actions out of the FDA, and the White House really made a big push at the end of last week to show that President Biden is on top of this. He held a meeting closed door, not open to press, with some manufacturers and some retailers related to the issue. But there's just not that much that the administration can do to quickly speed up this supply. They're talking to other producers and trying to get them to ramp up production. They're also, the FDA is working with this Abbott factory to try to get that back online. I believe the FDA commissioner said earlier today that it could be a matter of weeks, but they really don't know, and they're not trying to put an exact timeline on it. And there are those conversations about the Defense Production Act that is on the table, but the White House hasn't really made a move on that yet.
We mentioned that the president is going to Buffalo on Tuesday. He also has an overseas trip later this week. Where's he going, and what's the purpose of that trip?
So he's going to first to South Korea and then to Japan. And this is his first trip to Asia, so it's a big deal. He's been to Europe several times as president. But I think this is really about, you know, affirming those ties with America's Asian allies. Obviously, we've seen the president so focused on addressing Russia's threat and addressing Russia's war in Ukraine in the last several months. This is really going to see, you know, him focus more on, you know, threats due to North Korea, due to China, reaffirming those ties with America's Asian allies. And he's also going to be meeting with the Quad, which is leaders of Australia, Japan, and India.
Is there any sense of concern in the administration over the all of a sudden reported cases of COVID in North Korea and the health, clearly a health emergency going on there?
So the administration's monitoring all of this.
Yeah.
I don't know how the level of concern yet, but they're definitely focused on, you know, countries and how many cases are popping up and kind of what that means, you know, for the U.S. and for other variants and supply chain issues, especially related to China.
Let me ask both of you about the $40 billion, the latest request for Ukraine on the $40 billion. And Mariana, from your newspaper, your colleague Paul Kane had a piece over the weekend saying that the list of Republicans opposing support for Ukraine is going quickly. He focused primarily on Thomas Massie, but also mentioned the role of Senator Rand Paul in a procedural stoppage of that legislation over in the Senate. What's the proposed package? Tell us the amount, and why are there growing support, a growing group of Republicans who oppose it?
Yeah, so this is an extra $40 billion that would go to Ukraine for humanitarian relief, for military aid, to just be able to show out the U.S.'s support for Ukraine. And that's on top of an already $13 billion that was passed the previous month. Of course, the president had been saying, you know, we need more funding. These funds are running out quickly. We need to help counter Russia in some way. And it's taken a couple of weeks to be able to get this done, both from the House and the Senate. The House, of course, passed this bill already, but it's stuck in the Senate because of, like you mentioned, Senator Rand Paul. And it seems to be a Kentuckian issue. You also mentioned Thomas Massie over on the House side. Very different perspectives from the Senate Minority Leader, Mitch McConnell, who wants to get this done. He's, of course, just fresh off a trip from Ukraine over the weekend. And he's been saying, and what he told the Ukrainian president, we're going to get this done. The problem at hand is Paul wants to make sure he wanted to essentially add new text to legislation, not an amendment that you could just have a floor vote, make it a little bit easier, but completely change this bill to
his amendment would have done what?
It would have added an inspector general, essentially forcing them to look at how the money's being allocated and what could be done to potentially, you know, if this is affecting the economy in any way, inflation, kind of divert any spending.
And Morgan Schaufelin, is there concern at the White House that the package won't get passed? Or
I think they're confident. There's just so much bipartisan support for adding more assistance to Ukraine, especially in these, you know, highly politicized political times. You know, there is support, like Mariana mentioned, McConnell is very behind this. So I think they'll get it passed. The question is, you know, the timeline, and the White House certainly wants to see it as soon as possible.
The White House reporter from The Hill, Morgan Chalfant, along with Washington Post correspondent Mariana Sotomayor on this morning's Washington Journal. You can see more at cspan.org/WJ and on the free C-SPAN Now video app. And late this afternoon, the Associated Press reporting that baby formula maker Abbott has reached an agreement with U.S. health regulators to restart production at its largest domestic factory, though it will be well over a month, the Associated Press reports, before any new products ship from the site to help alleviate the national shortage facing parents. That's from the Associated Press this afternoon. You're listening to Washington Today. Welcome back to Washington Today. Here are some more headlines. The Supreme Court ruled today in favor of Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz in a case involving the use of campaign funds to repay personal campaign loans. The court said that a federal cap on candidates using political contributions after an election to recoup personal loans made to their campaign was unconstitutional. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote for the 6-3 majority decision, quote, "By restricting the sources of funds that campaigns may use to repay candidate loans, the regulation increases the risk that such loans will not be repaid. That in turn inhibits candidates from loaning their money to their campaigns in the first place, burdening core speech." The dispute arose after Senator Cruz put $260,000 of his own money into his 2018 reelection campaign, which exceeded federal campaign limits. President Biden has signed an order authorizing the military to once again deploy hundreds of special operations forces inside Somalia. The move reverses the decision by the Trump administration to withdraw nearly all 700 ground troops who had been stationed there. In addition, the president has approved a Pentagon request for standing authority to target about a dozen suspected leaders of al-Shabaab. That's the Somali terrorist group that is affiliated with al-Qaeda. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said Ukraine can win the war against Russia. Speaking via video link on Sunday as he recovers from COVID-19, the Secretary General said, quote, "President Vladimir Putin wants Ukraine defeated, NATO down, and Europe and North America divided. But Ukraine stands. NATO is stronger than ever. Europe and North America are solidly united. Ukraine can win this war." NATO members met over the weekend to discuss potential new memberships from Finland and Sweden. And the Senate Republican leader, Mitch McConnell, said he thinks the Nordic countries could be, quote, important additions to NATO. He added that the two countries would likely be able to pay their NATO obligations and would offer significant military capabilities. The Kentucky Republican was in the region along with a group of other Republican senators as a show of support against Russia's aggression in Ukraine. Here's Finnish President Sauli Niinisto on his meeting with Senator McConnell.
I want to refer our last meeting that was on March in Washington, and I once again want to thank you for encouragement you gave then a couple of months ago, and now you see the results. We had a very interesting discussion, not only dealing with Finnish membership in NATO, but also Ukraine and how we see world developing, getting better, how we get rid of these problems we have, the crisis in Ukraine.
Finnish President Sauli Niinisto on his meeting with Senator McConnell. For his part, Senator McConnell said he'd like to see the Senate's ratification of Finland and Sweden come soon. Here's more from the Kentucky Republican and the Finnish president.
Mika Hentunen from Finnish Broadcasting Company. I have a question for Senator McConnell. So what's your estimate, when will the Congress vote on the on ratifying the Finnish membership on NATO? Will that happen before the midterm elections? And then, and what do you think? And how many Republican senators will vote in favor of it?
Well, we hope to do it as rapidly as possible. Your question is, what is rapidly as possible? And I think certainly we hope to achieve it before the August recess, when Congress typically goes out of session. Obviously, that would be well before the fall election. With regard to the size of the vote, I think it will be very significant, not unanimous, but very significant.
Can you pass on the microphone to the gentleman next, and then we go to the center.
MTS Live, CBS News. Senator McConnell, you are calling on President Biden to declare Russia a state sponsor of terror. Can you explain why? And Mr. President, do you also agree that Russia should be declared a state sponsor of terror, and why?
Well, first, the president has it within his authority to designate Russia as a state sponsor of terrorism. Anyone who's been able to observe the events of the last couple of months would have to conclude the Russians certainly deserve to be included on that list.
I guess how we deal with Russia, what we say about Russia, that is what we discuss with our EU partners. EU has been very active, and I'm sure that the discussion will continue, and also activities.
Senator McConnell, Nick Robinson from CNN. President Erdogan has said that he doesn't look positively upon Finland and Sweden becoming members of NATO. Can President Erdogan block this process? And you've mentioned how quickly the United States, you anticipate, will move. How long do you believe this process of accession should take?
Well, it's our hope that whatever his concerns are, will be worked out by any objective standard. Both Finland and Sweden bring a great deal to the NATO alliance, strengthens the alliance far beyond what it is today, and hopefully that will be President Erdogan's view, too, in due time.
And according to a report by Reuters, Russian President Vladimir Putin said that Finland and Sweden potentially joining NATO does not, quote, pose a direct threat to Russia. Reuters quoting President Putin saying, quote, as far as expansion goes, including new members Finland and Sweden, Russia has no problems with these states, none. And so in this sense, there is no immediate threat to Russia from an expansion to include these countries. That topic and others were the focus of an event featuring Senate Foreign Affairs Committee member and Connecticut Democrat Chris Murphy here in Washington.
Putin's veiled and not so veiled nuclear threats, his and his team's allusions to nuclear forces, to other possibilities of retaliation. How do you see him playing? How do you see the strategy that he's deploying there? And what should our response be, particularly if Putin were to indeed invoke a nuclear weapon in a more active fashion, whether with just the launch mechanisms or, God forbid, actually launching something?
So there's no doubt that our policy and our strategy, our tactics, have to be educated and informed by the knowledge that Vladimir Putin is unstable enough, and I think will become desperate enough to consider some unthinkable options. I think we all shuddered a bit when we heard Bill Burns state publicly that the CIA could not rule out Vladimir Putin ultimately resorting to the use of tactical nuclear weapons. But the alternative, which is for the United States to stand down, to abandon Ukraine because of that threat, is unpalatable as well. I think the reason you see Finland and Sweden signing up for NATO, the reason you see a fundamental shift in Germany's disposition on armament is because they know, should Putin succeed in taking Ukraine, he's likely not done. And so this is a moment where, even with the risk of potential tactical nuclear use, we have got to stand up for Ukraine. Now, we are watching Russia's nuclear footprint very carefully. We stay very much informed by the administration of any changes we see. And as I said, this is all, our tactics, our strategy do ultimately have to be dependent on the threat, whether it goes up or down, of nuclear usage from Russia. Now, I would just make one quick additional editorial comment. You know, we're also in this debate right now over whether we should get back into the nuclear agreement with Iran. I don't know why U.S. policymakers would be rooting for another of our most potent adversaries to become nuclear weapon armed. We should be doing everything within our power right now to keep Iran from getting a nuclear weapon, having seen how Putin's nuclear arsenal does limit and constrain our options when he does something as disastrous as perpetuate war crimes in a neighboring country.
Connecticut Democrat and Senate Foreign Relations Committee member Chris Murphy speaking at an event sponsored by the American Security Project. You can see that entire event at cspan.org and also on our C-SPAN Now video app. A reminder that this program is available as a podcast. You can find that at cspan.org/podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you'd like more on the stories that are shaping Washington delivered daily right to your inbox, you can subscribe to C-SPAN's evening newsletter word for word. Just go to cspan.org/connect to subscribe. I'm Gary Starikoff. Thanks a lot for listening today to Washington Today.